Just to remind us, in case we get too comfortable, it's not very far away. Mishu tsarich tirgum le'ivrit mi anglit as mamash, don't be shy. It bayesh yesh tirgum akshav achora as Mishur she tzirich zakuk le tirgum le ivrit vaksha orit sham yoshev achora as lo shomim. Okay. How do I handle this thing? Kacha. Okay. Feels like I'm at the dentist. Shumim oti? As mishu she tzrich zakuk le tirgum le ivrit bevakasha efshar lashevet al yad orit sham achora v'mekabel tirgum le ivrit. Okay. So tonight I want to talk about calming this crazy mind of ours. We have a mind that's very, very powerful. I sometimes think when I'm traveling on a Boeing 747 and it takes off, this huge plane carrying 400 people, and it all comes from under the earth, minerals, metals. And I just can't believe that this is happening. That the human mind is so ingenious as to make a thing called a Boeing 747 that can take 400 people across the world. It just seems amazing. It's amazing that the mind can write Shakespeare, can discuss philosophy, can build things, and it's amazing how helpless the mind is. How we are so helpless like children, we can't solve a problem of conflict between two peoples that should live together beautifully in this part of the world and for 600 years. But I, this is falling down. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Okay. Shall you tell? So, at the same time, we have a wonderful, huge mind with as many connections inside as there are stars in the sky. And on the other hand, the mind is helpless. We can't solve the problem of conflict for 60 years with our neighbors here. We can't stop burning up the planet. But we don't know what we're going to give to our children. Many of you are pregnant. What kind of planet are we going to give to the children coming? And it's like the mind can't manage to live in the world. So, and I think that we experience this in our daily life. We experience that life seems to be from morning to night one long journey of coping. Itmodadut. Struggling. To live properly, to be healthy, to have money. We find ourselves all the time busy, doing, functioning, and we're designed that way from the age of 1 or 2 years old, from the kindergarten, we're designed to be functioning. We're designed as human doing, not human being. And our life seems to be on a kind of automatic pilot. Tayas automati, that we are just doing, and struggling and coping, and we want it better, and we want to be happy, and we want to design things so that they're right for us, and we want to push away difficulty and so on. And somehow or other, this huge mind has got in a box. And the box is called our worries and our difficulties and our struggles and our inability to cope. It reminds me of this joke about a Jewish mother wrote a telegram from abroad to her family. The telegram said, "Start worrying. Details to follow." And we basically, in all this doing, we are trying to keep the world safe and not troubling us. And the doing is designed to predict, to prevent chaos, uncertainty, suffering. And that's, we are devoting our life to that God. And so, how did it happen, and what are we going to do about it? There is a Sanskrit word called samsara, and samsara really means a wheel, and the wheel is this sense that we are traveling round and round, life after life, generation after generation, like a hamster, or gear, is it? In the wheel, like this, just going round, and it's called survival. We're just busy with the survival. In the picture of samsara, what keeps the wheel going is called the three poisons. In the Buddhist language, the three poisons are greed, namely, I need, I want, magiyali, I have to have, I want things to be comfortable, aversion, I don't want, I don't like, this knot, this pain, this disease, this difficulty, this loss, pushing away, and delusion or illusion, which is basically that this is all there is, what I see is the world and there's nothing else, and I have to cope, and this struggle is the world. That's the delusion. So the three poisons, the I want, I don't want, and I'm in don't know, they keep the samsara rolling round and round. They keep us like this, like the hamster inside the wheel. And there must be some other way. And there is. And very often, we need some kind of a shock, some kind of a push to begin to knock us off the wheel. In the case of the Buddha, he was protected all his life. According to the mythology of the life of the Buddha, he was protected in a kind of comfort zone, in a castle of comfort. And probably because he was so protected, when he saw reality in the face, in the form of a sick person, a poor person, a dead body, and a monk, who was renounced, who homeless. So all those four became for him messengers. And you can feel how he was inside this pleasure palace, and the shock of seeing reality was enough to dramatically send him on a spiritual journey. And I think for many of us, we get these shocks. The last Hanukkah retreat, the shock was the war in Gaza. That's a messenger. If there's no messenger, that's a messenger. And if we wake up to a messenger like that, we can't just carry on our life, normal life resuming in the comfort zone. That's a messenger like the Buddha's messenger of the poor person or the sick person or the dead person. So we do get them. Now, very often in the middle of a retreat, wars happen. I don't know exactly why. maybe they just happen all the time around here. Or maybe we just choose a bad time. Maybe choose a good time. So the Dharma, the spiritual journey, especially in the Buddhist world, but not only, is pushing us to inquire what we have done with this mind. That we have in some way sold our mind to the world. What did we do with this great big mind? Where did we put it? In what kind of box did we put it? And the process of inquiry and a spiritual journey follows. To ask completely fresh existential questions, and not theoretical, but here. The spiritual journey is not about reading lots and lots of books. That's part of it. But that it's not enough. It's about what happens here. Who is this? How am I made? What is happening to me? What box am I in? Or have I been put in through samsara? And I think quite quickly we can discover that we are under a great deal of illusion. And the one illusion is that life is non-stop struggle. That there is me here and the world there, and all I need to do and have to do is struggle. Struggle against the world. One of the things that happen when we go through an inquiry into what is meaningful in life and we open the whole story is that the question of me here and the world there is beginning to open up. And very often we might find, actually, I am the world. The world is in me. I'm not in the world. The world is in me. I see the world according to the colors of my glasses. I remember in Benares when I was there in Varanasi, 1975, and a year in Varanasi. And every morning on the way to the Ganga, there's a line of beggars. And one beggar in particular was had no arms and no legs. And he was in a box, being pushed by somebody else. And the amazing thing about this beggar was that he was singing, and he was laughing, and he had fire in his eyes, and he was shining, and he was just full of this dynamic, shining, happy energy coming from this guy with no arms and no legs in a box. Beggar and no money. So you could say, oh, well, maybe it was to get money. But it's not that. That his eyes were so shining and so bright, all you could do is give him respect. It's our mind that brings happiness or unhappiness. It's our mind that we see the world like this or like that. It's our mind that defines the world as a struggle or not as a struggle. It's our mind that through which we see the world. The world is in us and in our mind, not we in the world. And therefore, if we change our mind and if we look at our mind, and if we understand our mind, everything shifts. Everything shifts completely. We get off the wheel. Meditation is part of the story, not the only part. The Dharma life has many, many aspects to it, and meditation is only one. There are many other practices, directions, values that bring us change, that change our view, that change our life. But meditation is one of them and is quite approachable, meaning that we can just come to a retreat, we sit down and we start. And so it's in a way easy as an entrance gate for us. Meditation is needed as something else other than thinking. If we could think our way out of our problems, we wouldn't need meditation. But thinking is one of the problems in the first place. If we try and think our way through negative thoughts, all we're doing is we're adding more and more and more illusion to ourselves. So thinking is not that it's a problem, but it's not going to solve fundamentally the existential difficulty that we face, that a human being faces in this world. The thinking is not enough. Einstein once said, you can't solve problems with the same mind that created them. You need to shift the mind to somewhere else to really be able to make change, to change the way we are in the world. It's not enough just thinking. We've had all those years of education, we've read millions of books, and they do not do the job. They're helpful, but they do not do the job. They do not get us off this wheel of samsara. So meditation is a very important practice that allows us to use the mind in a totally different way. Not thinking our way out of our problems, but using the mind in another way altogether. And that's why we do it. And the meditation has various parts to it. And basically I want to talk about two aspects tonight. The first is calming. Calming down, cooling down, slowing down. Part of our addiction to doing, to thinking, to running, to functioning, to controlling is just so intensive, we actually forgot what it's like to stop. Meditation is the place where we begin to learn to stop. And it's not easy. As many of you have found, you sit down for 45 minutes, but the mind's just going and running and running still. So we stop our body, the mind keeps going. We manage to stop our mind, the body hurts. We manage to have a few minutes of break, we're restless. We manage to stop, and then we get bored. Why we get bored? Because we stopped. In other words, stopping is by no means easy. It's like everything we've been doing all our life, all the conditioning, just is inside us. So stopping is slow, stopping is a process. It's not so easy. First thing about the stopping or the calming is simply to reduce the stimulation. And that's something that we've been doing here. We slow down, we do sit 45 minutes. That's already something. Actually, to sit for, when do we do that? Only if there's a major exciting movie on TV can we possibly sit 45 minutes quietly. And so we stopped a little bit just through sitting. We slowed down through putting our mobile phones somewhere else, through disconnecting from telephones, through disconnecting from talking. We slow down the waves in the mind through quietness. These are externals from the external world, but they help us. They help us to show that we can be with less stimulation. That it's possible. But it's not anesthesia. It'll be all very nice if we can all take kind of a large dose of some sleeping pill and say, oh, I had a great retreat. I actually stopped completely, didn't do anything, slept through 1 week. It was wonderful. It's not anesthesia. The stopping is about allowing us to see more deeply. So stopping has a purpose. The purpose is like the waves on the pool that get slower and quieter. And when the waves on the pool get quieter, we can actually see more inside the water. So the stopping is allowing us to see. Because mostly we're running so fast we don't see ourselves. The stopping allows us to see ourselves. It gives us space, it gives us room, it gives us time to breathe and to see where we are, who we are, what we are, what's going on inside us. Stopping and calming down is very much part of the process. It does have some very powerful positive benefit to our life. And the way the Buddha described it, he didn't actually describe it as stopping. He described it as being steady. Being steady is in the middle of the, like I said yesterday, the tsunami. The tsunami is there all the time, but we stand steady. In the middle of difficulty, pain, problems, in the middle of the unexpected of life that we don't control, we stay steady. Why? Because we learnt by sitting 45 minutes, steady with ourself and our body and our mind, something happens to us, like our ta'im, our constitution, our cells. We learn to sit steady in the middle of change. And that's very important. And if we go away from this retreat with an ability to sit steady in the middle of change, in the middle of things that might make us afraid or worried, in the middle of unexpected, in the middle of struggle, we sit steady, we stand steady, we are steady. It's a great help in our life. But more than that, the calmness of stopping allows us to begin to see more deeply. Like I said, to look into the pool and see what's underneath. The poet Wordsworth said, with the eye of wisdom and the heart of love to see into the life of things, that there's something about slowing down and stopping allows us to see into the life of things, ourselves and the world. So it's got a value, besides calming down, it's got a value, and I'll talk about that, and we'll be practicing more and more the seeing during the week together. The beginning of this week, we are more in the mode of calming and slowing. As we go through the week, we'll begin to be more and more in the world of seeing. The calming is also talked about as concentration. You may think of concentration as like focusing on one thing, like a candle. Many people think meditation is like watching a candle and concentrating. And the concentration is part of meditation, but not the only part. But for us, the concentration is on movement. We don't concentrate on one object. We concentrate on moving objects. The breath, the walking, the body, the breath itself is moving, the changes that are happening. The concentration for us is like, say, in a football analogy, just keep your eye on the ball. Don't take your eye off the ball. Keep your eye there. So even though the objects change, the world is changing every moment, our experience is changing, we are steady with it. We know, like I said this morning in the morning meditation, the concentration part is if we're moving our hand, we know the hand here and here and here and here and here and here and here all the way. We don't just know, okay, I know the hand here and then I'm thinking of something else. And I don't know how the hand got there. It just got there. I know the hand here and I suddenly find my hand there. And in the middle I was thinking of something else. Concentration on a moving object, which is our experience, is keeping our eye on the ball so we know we're there with it all the way. When we're walking, we're there with it, step after step after step. When we're breathing, we're there with the breathing at the beginning, in the middle, and the end, and the next breath, as much as we can. So, in the tradition, the body and the breath are the first places that we begin to practice. And that's why some of you have said, well, I don't understand this. Surely spiritual path has got to be more interesting than watching the breath. I mean, surely it's all about, I mean, I've been reading some amazing books breath seems such a stupid thing to do. What's interesting about the breath? I know I breathe. As long as I'm alive, I breathe. So why do I have to pay attention to the breath? But it's very wise to pay attention to the breath and the body. It's very wise because it's the easiest place to bring our mind back into the world. Our mind has got, in a way, locked into the thinking, locked into the explanation, locked into the struggle. We want to bring our mind back into the relationship with the world. And the body is a great place to do it. The body is a great place to learn calmness. The body is a great place to learn to be steady. If we're standing in, I don't know, in the middle of the street and someone starts shouting at us, the minute we connect with the body and the earth and the breath, we're in a totally different place. We're there, steady. They can shout. But I'm at home. And I'm unmoved. I cannot be moved. I'm here with my body and the world. I'm in contact. Nothing can happen. It's that kind of steadiness that being the body can really help. Meditating with the body is a very important and powerful way of calming and bringing presence and bringing steadiness to our life. I would say that all our life will be, it's always there as part of practice. It's not that you practice with the body and then you can forget the body and go to some higher realms and that's where you're in the high spaces. I'm sure the Buddha and all the practitioners, the body is part of their practice, always. So the body is a very good entrance gate, and it's a good friend to practice with, and it's a good place, it's always with us, it teaches us a lot, it's where we live. So the body is where we start. And that's why mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of the body, calmness, steadiness, concentration in the body. But the other part, along with calmness and along with concentration, is mindfulness. And it's a little bit different. Whereas concentration is about knowing and continuing to know that this hand, following this hand all the way. Mindfulness is knowing what's going on with this hand. What is it? What's the feelings? What's happening to it? Where is it? How is it? What's the messages? That's mindfulness. If we're out in the grass, what's the touch of the grass? Let me get closer. Let me get in touch. Let me get intimate. Let me understand what in this cool pool of water I'm looking underneath. What's there? What's coming up? What's happening to me? What's my body saying? What's the new bits of my body that I didn't notice before? What are they saying? What's happening with my breath? What's happening with the difference between one breath and the next? What's actually going on? That's mindfulness. That goes together with the calm and the concentration. It's expanding the mind. It's expanding the power of mind. Mindfulness is seeing. It's seeing into the life of things, as Wordsworth was saying. And if we can see into a breath, we can see into anything. We can see the suffering of another person. We can see the way a tree grows. We can notice the ants in the grass. If we can really enter into one breath, we can enter into anything. So this is expanding the mind. Mindfulness is being full of mind. The problem, our problem is the habit of forgetting. That we keep forgetting. We keep switching off. We keep going back into the old habits of thinking about and trying to solve the problems and trying to and remembering and being in the past and being in the future and being with the 1001 things and not here with what's really happening to us. So in the Pali language, mindfulness is sati, and sati is paying attention and remembering, coming back, remembering to be aware. So when we forget, we lose the breath, we lost ourselves in thinking, the process of coming back is an important moment. Because it's mindfulness. It's remembering to be here. So we shouldn't blame ourselves if we get lost, if we lose the breath, lose the body, we get lost in thinking and fantasies and the past and the future and what will happen and what will not happen and what's going on with me, etc. No. The moment of coming back, that's mindfulness. It's more important than anything else. To be aware, to arrive, to penetrate, to look into the life of things. And it's it brings a lot of understanding. That's what brings us to look again at our life. One of the places that the first thing that might happen to us is we feel disturbance. Mafriya lanu. Very quickly it can happen. We're sitting quietly, it's too hot, it's too cold, my back hurts me, there's a noise outside, there's a fly on my nose, my thoughts are disturbing me, this is disturbing me, there's a tractor outside making a big noise. But very soon we feel disturbance. What's disturbance actually? A bird, the sound of a bird, we say great. The sound of a tractor is disturbance. Well, who defined? Who made that distinction? Where did that come from? We made it, no? Our thoughts. Why are our thoughts disturbing us? Why isn't our blood disturbing us? Why isn't the messages from my hands disturbing me? Oh, my hands are so loud. They're talking all the time. Shut up. The Buddha once said that you can get enlightenment from the rustle of leaves in the trees. So once we were on a retreat in America, and there was a very, very big tractor working just outside the window of the meditation center, making a huge noise. So someone said, "Hey," no one could hear anything, "can I ask a question? Can you get enlightened from the sound of a tractor?" And the teacher thought about it and said, "I have to say yes." Because of this, what we describe as disturbing is in our minds. It's not in the world. The world is just the world. So we say that is disturbing and not this. This is disturbing, not that. Boredom is disturbing. Restlessness disturbs, pain in the body. Actually, we disturb the sound. The sound doesn't disturb us. Because sound is just sound. We put on the sound disturbance. So we are disturbing the sound. But that's what tends to happen. And that's where, in a way, our practice begins. And very often it's quite hard for us to catch this. That when we sit quietly or walk and disturbance happens, at that moment we have an opportunity to look into our life, look into all that life that constructed the problems. We have an opportunity to look into samsara, to look into the habits, the difficulties, the struggle of our own life. There is a microscope there. This is exactly the mabada that Simi talked about on the first night. The moment of disturbance is very important for us because there is a window onto all the troubles we have in our life. And it comes up. We'll talk about it more. Pain in the body, tiredness, restlessness, thoughts, thinking, it seems, or physical problems, heat, cold, and so on. They make us want to give up, they make us want to, it's no good, it's not working for me, I should be calm and peaceful. And here is boredom, and here is restlessness, and here is hot, heat, and here is cold, and here is tractors, and too many people, and not enough food, and I don't know what. That's where the practice begins. As I was saying to my group today, one teacher has a very nice image. He said, that's the place in the treasure, the map of Treasure Island, where there is an X that says, dig here. The treasure is underneath. The treasure is underneath the boredom and the pain in the body and the difficulty we have. That the treasure is underneath. We dig there. Because that's where the life is coming to show us. The life will come like that. The life doesn't necessarily come as angels singing. Can do. It's not that there are no angels singing. But very often, life comes up as boredom, the reminders of samsara. During the course of the week, we'll be moving stage by stage. The first stage is today, tomorrow, next day. We'll be working on calming, be working on concentration, we'll be working on quietening the mind, and we're beginning and working on mindfulness, looking at things, looking at ourselves in the mirror. Slowly, slowly, during the course of the week, we'll begin to touch vipassana, and vipassana is the power to work with the material that comes up to us. So it's a stage-by-stage process. At the moment, we are, in a way, sharpening the tools of the mind. In a way, we're developing a different way at looking at life. Instead of thinking about things, we are beginning to learn another way of looking at life, which is direct knowing, which is more intuitive, a bigger mind, seeing things in a different way. So have patience, because the disturbances do come. Work developing the tools of attention, the tools of calmness, the tools of steadiness. Just keep working with those tools, and slowly, slowly, during the week, we will learn to use the tools. Right now, we're still learning to develop the tools. After all our life, with education and this and that, we've been going in a certain direction. We can't suddenly change direction in one day. It takes time. We do need the patience. And we will have frustration. We will sit for 45 minutes and only catch 3 breaths and think we failed. It's natural. It's because we are going against the stream. We're trying something different. Meditation is different from thinking about. So we need patience. We need persistence. We need to be in there. Keep going. And on the way, as I say, there are lots of interesting things that we will see or we will discover. The whole direction is towards wisdom. The calmness and the mindfulness and the practice that we're doing leads to wisdom. Tovana, insight, knowing, seeing things differently. And you can define wisdom in the Buddhist context as an ability to be free within the conditions of life. Not controlled by the conditions of life, but free inside the conditions of life. Life we cannot control. Life will throw at us what it wants. We are not able to, however hard we try, with the building Boeing 747s and controlling the world, we still can't control life. But we can be master of our minds. We can be able to be free and dance in the middle of the conditions, whatever life throws at us. And that's the wisdom. That's the freedom and the awakening. And that's what we're here for. Okay, so let's have a few minutes of quietness.